according to St. Luke.
When the time came for their purification according to the law of Moses, Mary and Joseph brought Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male shall be designated as holy to the Lord. And they offered a sacrifice according to what is stated in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. This man was righteous and devout, looking forward to the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit rested on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Guided by the Spirit, Simeon came into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was customary under the law, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, "Master, now you are dismissing your servant in peace according to your word. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel." And the child's father and mother were amazed at what was being said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to his mother Mary, "This child is destined for the falling and the rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be opposed, so that the inner thoughts of many will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too." There was also a prophet, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age, having lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then as a widow to the age of 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped there with fasting and prayer night and day. At that moment, she came and began to praise God and to speak about the child to all who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. When they had finished everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth. The child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of the Lord was upon him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
Please be seated. We are blessed this morning to have a guest preacher. He's not really a guest to us. He's our very own Chris Bryant. Chris?
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
How many were here by show of hands at the first sermon? The first service? A person? Two. Okay, you are obligated to laugh at the jokes again, right? All right, good morning to all. Grace and peace to you. Today is, I'm told, Candlemas. I didn't realize the name of that. It's Candlemas. It's also Groundhog Day, I've learned this morning. You pick the important one, I guess. That's Groundhog Day for some. It's supposed to be winter for another 6 months, so prepare for that. Okay? Most importantly, as you can see from my address, today is Scout Sunday at Christ the King. How many people knew that? Okay, so glad I said something. If you see others dressed in scouting attire, or if you are an ex-scout or an old scout or a once scout, be aware that there's a blessing built into this service later. We would like you to participate in that. For those that don't realize it, Scout Sunday is a movable feast type of a Sunday where usually falls in January or February in recognition of the birthday of the scouting movement globally. And in the U.S., that tends to be Boy Scouts of America, which is now Scouts America, Scouts USA, and the Cub Scouts. I think the Girl Scouting movement has a different founding day, but they also celebrate around now. So watch for those folks today. At one point recently, I was having a conversation with Amy Ells, Deacon Amy, about scouting and what I did as a volunteer. And I do a lot of training for other adults on how to conduct religious services in the field and at events and things, and we talked for a while, and it became maybe too long a conversation because I like to talk about scouting. And later I received an email from Amy with an opportunity to share my preaching with you. So here I am. Thank you for that, Amy. Much appreciated. Okay. All right, so I humbly submit this sermon. It is titled Duty to God, and I will expand that a bit, and now for the second service, call it Fulfillment of Duty to God. And I'd like you to ponder that while we consider what we've heard. All right. For the Epiphany season, the pastors here have developed a sermon series that we've been listening to. And the theme is, now is the time. Now is the time. Right? Today's subtitle, I was told, is Fulfillment. And if you think about the reading we just heard, it makes a lot of sense. The gospel text today was Luke 2, 22 through 40. And in the text, we see a young mother and a young father fulfilling an obligation, taking their firstborn male child for presentation at the temple. We also see certain bystanders observing the crowd and getting particularly excited when they see a child brought in, a particular child, and interpreting that as the fulfillment of a promise from God. Okay. Why is this important to us, and what does this mean? Okay. It seems that in the eyes of the gospel writer, there's at least two types of fulfillment going on here. Fulfillment of religious obligations, as the family presented the firstborn male at the temple, and fulfillment of a promise, as God delivers on a prior promise to the spectators, Simeon and Anna, that they had been waiting for quite a while. Are there other fulfillments in this scene? Maybe. Mary and Joseph are fulfilling several obligations, perhaps. They may have a communal obligation, family, tight-knit family obligation of some kind. Maybe they were expected to take their firstborn to this ceremony, but really wouldn't rather have spent the time and effort to do this. We're not told. I don't know that, right? We've all had that situation before where maybe we're obliged to attend something that we might not have otherwise chosen to do. I don't like to think that about Mary and Joseph and Jesus, but I suppose it's possible. I think most of us read this as a devout mother and father humbly meeting their religious obligations in the way they were taught and they were expected. I like to think of it that way, and that is a type of fulfillment, fulfilling an obligation. Simeon is apparently so excited to witness Jesus that he takes the child into his arms and then begins a long rave about how this child has suddenly fulfilled everything he's been waiting for and he can go off in peace. He's certainly fulfilled in some way, or thinks he is. You wonder what that would look like today if someone brought a child in here and all of us suddenly were excited and someone got so excited they lifted the child and hugged them. And it doesn't say Simeon knew them in any way prior to that. So it's quite an interesting picture that you're painting there, right? It does tell us that Simeon was righteous and devout. And one thinks that perhaps that gave him, in the writer's view, that gives us a clue into Simeon's mind. And he is someone who would be expected to see what's really occurring right in front of them. I think this is the same thing that's emphasized in the story with Anna, when we're told she's been there for many, many years, never leaving the temple, if the writer is to be believed, for quite long periods of time, fasting, praying, constantly at the temple, waiting for something. And then upon seeing Jesus, she begins praising God. Again, something in her mind is fulfilled, right? Fulfilling this promise of a redemption for Jerusalem as she sees it. And then even in the ending of the story, we see that Mary and Joseph, and I think it reads, having done everything required by the law of the Lord, then returns to Galilee. And Jesus, the young boy, then grows and becomes wise and so on. And so there's this obligation that was required, a fulfillment of an obligation, leading to blessings perhaps, leading to excitement and good things generally. It's fascinating, all that in the one scene. Okay, lots of fulfillment going on. But what does that mean today, to us today? If we think about the word fulfillment and how we use it in language today, rather than in this reading, I think it's a little different. So we might get some insight. A basic definition that we could probably agree on for the word fulfillment is the achievement of something desired, promised, or predicted. Okay? The achievement of something predicted, desired, promised. Did you fulfill your lifelong dream of winning the whatever? Did you fulfill your lifelong dream of traveling to wherever? Are you fulfilled generally with your life? Are your relationships fulfilling? These are modern uses of the term that we're not really speaking of today, but it gives some insight into our desire. I think rather, let's talk about fulfillment as a completion of a promise or an obligation. Right? Did you meet your obligation? So what is our obligation? What is this obligation that Chris is telling me about? Most people think of scouting as involving outdoors, developing good citizenship, teaching youth to be prepared. Be prepared for what? Be prepared for anything. Anything and everything, I tell. But that's scouting. And if I ask you to list off certain characteristics of scouts, we would generally land on the same four or five. Okay? However, I'm often surprised to learn that non-scouts are unaware of the religiousness and duty to God that are key obligations of the programs. They're built into scouting from the beginning. Okay. Upon joining, young scouts commit to the organization by making a sign with their hand and speaking an oath. Right. The oath that they then repeat thousands of times through their scouting career. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country and to obey the scout law. And so it goes from there. Okay. What was the first promise made? Duty to God. Do your best to do your duty to God. In addition, scouts promise to follow a law developed by themselves, right? A law that we follow, it becomes an obligation of the scouts. What is the scout law? Many of you can name parts of it, maybe all of it, okay? A scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean. And what's the 12th point of the scout law? Scout is reverent, right? So the first promise in the oath, the last point in the law, bookends to an entire program. Do your duty to God, and develop this reverence and deliver on it, whatever that is. Okay. In ceremonial presentations, the law is described as a scout is reverent. I'm so sorry. Let's see. Scout is reverent. He does his duty to God, and he respects the beliefs of others. Okay? Respects the beliefs of others. Scouting's focus on religiosity is not Christian. Okay? It was something that is, the scouting movement is unique in being beloved, I'll say, by and allowed by every religion, every major religion on earth, okay? Endorsed by every major religion. That's unusual. Scouts have developed religious services, vesper services for the evenings, sunrise services. We use these in the field regularly. There's a tradition of grace before all meals. If you know a scout who's been to Philmont Scout Ranch in New Mexico, you know someone who was exposed to the concept of a group chaplain. The boys themselves and the girls, the scouts themselves, become these members of the team. Okay. As a practical matter, many scout troops are sponsored by religious institutions, and that is for a reason. Okay. So, as a part of regular advancement, as a scout progresses through the ranks, to Eagle Scout, let's say, there are requirements to be met. One of those requirements on a regular basis is a meeting with their scoutmaster. And this is traditionally referred to as a scoutmaster conference, and it can be nerve-wracking for younger scouts. They're not really sure what's about to happen here. It can be nerve-wracking for the leader giving the conference, I suppose, depending on what you're talking about. But it's an opportunity for the leaders to have a more personal conversation with that one scout and learn a little bit more about how they are progressing on their path. Okay. Surprisingly, although not to you now that you've heard me speak, but surprisingly, many people don't realize that that first question of a Scoutmaster conference will often focus on God. What is your duty to God, right? As a youth, I became an Eagle Scout, and I went through 7 of these conferences as a scout with a leader. 7 ranks, 7 conferences. As an adult leader, I've participated and led hundreds, well, over 100, let's say that, over 100 of these conferences. It's surprising how it can work, okay? Let's say that if the first question I were to ask that scout were, tell me how you have met your obligation to God and what you've done in the last 30 days to fulfill that obligation. What have you done actively that you could describe to me right now? And then I sit. Okay. Can you answer that question now? That's challenging. It's challenging for most of us. It's particularly challenging with an 11-year-old or a teenager. Okay. But I'm going to say it's even more challenging perhaps for adults. So if I were to turn this around right now on you and say, okay, let's try this. I would like you to take a moment. Turn to your neighbor in the pew and answer this question or statement with 2 sentences, okay? Prepare yourselves to answer this question. Please turn and tell your neighbor right now, what have you done to meet your duty to God in the last month? Okay, that's enough. All right, I'm getting the same looks that I get from the youth, okay? I'm getting the same looks I got at 8:30, right? I'm getting blank stares, I'm getting uncertain responses. It becomes clear to me that this question is not really designed to force that advancement candidate to rattle off something that I'm gonna check or not check. But it's to make them think, to challenge them, just like you are now challenged. Right? If I was going to pick one of you at random to get up and tell me your answer, you'd be pretty nervous. I think. I would be. Okay. Many of the scouts I met with had not thought about a response to such a question before. Many of them hadn't any idea it would be asked, in spite of memorizing that oath. Many had not thought, they were obviously concerned about knowing the proper response. What did I want them to say? They were anxious to learn that key so that the next time they could give the proper answer. Okay. Still others would list off actions they'd undertaken in the last 30 days and not knowing how any of it tied together and hoping that one of those words would be the key. Right. Most of the conversations, probably like you would admit to yourselves today, most of the conversations boiled down to, I'm not really sure what my duty to God is. And it's difficult to accomplish this task with that shortage. Right? Now, I didn't find this particularly surprising. We were talking about young people. They're going through life, they're out there with limited guidance, they're trying to learn skills, take tests, be in school, hang out with their friends, all of those things together, okay? And the response I developed to keep that conversation going was this, okay? I would steer the conversation into one about, what did you think your obligation was? What do you think your duty might be, given what you do know? How would you go about finding out what you think your duty might be? Maybe that is your duty, is to figure out your duty, right? At least for the next meeting, okay? Who could they speak with? Who could they pray with? Where might this information be found? And keep in mind, this is a conversation with a non-parent, non-relative, right? Non-religious leader, I'll say. Okay? So uncomfortable for some people. Uncomfortable for a lot of adults. Okay? So how does this apply to you today? How do we apply this? I've come to realize that this inquiry into duty to God might be a good question for all of us to answer. Each and every person could ponder this. You can do it at any time. It's fairly easy to do. If you can't answer the question, you must have some work to do. Maybe. Right? Okay. As Lutheran Christians, we certainly also make promises. We make commitments. We make pledges. Right? We profess our faith in a statement of belief. We promise to guide newly baptized in their growing in the faith, standing with them at the font or in the crowd. We reaffirm beliefs and pledges at our confirmations. Many of us take on duties within the congregation, minor or major, at various times that require commitment. I'm sure you could all come up with your own examples. There's lots of ways, as Lutheran Christians, we make promises to each other, perhaps even to God. Okay? Most of these promises and commitments and trust responsibilities are taken on with an appeal. We ask God to help us, knowing we're too weak. Right? You'll recall the phrase, I do, and I ask God to help me. Right? Seems a very powerful combination to me as I wrote this. Your promise and God's commitment to help. Who can stand against that? However, our experience, yours probably like mine, is that like many of the scouts who stood before me for advancement, we all occasionally lose track of what our duty really is, or we can't articulate it at the moment. What will it really take to fulfill these promises? We promise, but without thinking about what you just took on, you find yourself later not fulfilling it. The gospel passage today made it very clear that God fulfills promises. Simeon and Anna waited a long time. And in God's own time, he fulfills promises made. The passage also showed the significance of fulfilling your own obligations. Sometimes personal, sometimes within the community and family. And doing those things perhaps as a part of a bigger, grandly encompassing project that God had in mind. Yours was just a tiny part, but you had no idea. The importance of your duty might seem small to you, but be very important in the overall scheme. So when should we go about doing this? When to get up and take action? Right? I submit to you now that the title to this sermon series gives us a clue. Now is the time. Now is the time. So today, as we go forth, I challenge each of you to consider your obligation to fulfill your duty to God. Now, in this time. If you're unsure of what your duty is and who isn't, I challenge you to make finding that duty your next step. Now is the time. I challenge you to consider fulfilling your own duty in the context of your life, your family, your community, this congregation. What are your duties to these different aspects of your life? Make the fulfillment of your duty a personal daily challenge. But above all, now is the time. If not now, when? Now is the time. God fulfills promises. He has great plans for us and for this congregation if we will simply take our part. Praise be to God.